I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. Mary Janet McDonald is my guest today, and oh, what a treat she is. I was absolutely thrilled to host this conversation. You'll know her as the author of the Tunes and Wooden Spoons cookbook series. She rose to popularity during the pandemic by doing a Facebook Live in her kitchen, and it became so popular that she started doing it weekly, and she really gained a following. So we talk about how all that happened. We talk about the wisdom she has to share and her most recent book, where she focuses on older women. This was such a warm and authentic and delightful conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Mary Janet McDonald, welcome to Soul Sister Conversations.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a delight to meet you and to chat with you today. You are author of the Tunes and Wooden Spoons recipe books. You have two. Your first one is Recipes from a Cape Breton Kitchen, and the most recent one is Love Without Measure. And I heard about you in 2020. I'd heard about this lady doing cooking shows in Cape Breton, but for some reason, I didn't check you out at that time, probably because I was too busy baking and cooking myself or absolutely frozen in fear about
exactly.
Everything.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
But I was surprised I didn't check you out, but because I love to bake and I would have enjoyed it. And now I've gone back and looked at some of those earlier videos and I was like, oh, I really missed out. I must have been hiding under a rock. But you've become a bit of a celebrity in at least Atlantic Canada and maybe other places as too. Have you surprised by that?
Honestly, Dana, it has taken me. I still shake my head sometimes because when I think of where I am, like I'm in a small little village in Cape Breton called Port Hood, and on a good day we might have 1,000 people, and you know, I like to bake. I'm not a tremendous baker or cook, but I like to cook for my family. So just to see how it grew from that first session to all that has happened in the meantime in the last 3 years, it's sometimes overwhelming. And it just, you know, I just get a kick out of being somewhere and somebody coming over to me and saying, oh, you're the cinnamon roll lady or whatever. It's so funny.
Because that's the first thing that you made that you became known for.
Correct. Well, to begin with, I'm one of those people that I'll do anything at the spur of the moment. If somebody wants to go somewhere, do something, let's do that. You know, that's a great idea. So that particular day before that first show, my daughter, Margie, she's the third oldest of our seven children. And three of her children were at that time in Fort McMurray, Alberta. She was by herself in her condo and in lockdown. And she's one of those that's traipsing through the woods and she does photography on the side and all kinds of things. And she just didn't know what she was going to do with her time. And she's a big idea person as well. So she said, Mom, well, you know how everybody in the family loves your cinnamon rolls. Why don't you just do Facebook Live and show them how to do your cinnamon rolls? Just bake them, you know, show everybody how. So it was just going to be that one thing. And I said, of course, yes, I'll do that. I'll do anything because we're here on lockdown. I didn't know how to do it. And nobody could come in to help you because you're on lockdown. So I stumbled through that first session thinking that it would just be a first session and that others would take turns. And that's how it started, Dana. That's just how it started. Simple.
Yeah, simple. And I think there's just a lot of lessons with your success and how all this started. But I know people who have businesses and we, you know they should be doing lives or video and they're afraid to do it. And so you're obviously not shy. And the fact that you're not afraid of technology, you think, sure, I'm just going to flip on that camera and off I go.
Excellent. That's exactly what I did. Exactly
so
what I did.
You weren't afraid of that or looking stupid or
no,
any of that?
You know what? I know who I am. And It's okay if I drop an egg or if I flub something. It's okay. I'm not worried about that. I'm happy with who I am, and I laugh at myself sometimes, so that helps.
Laughter goes a long way.
Yes, it sure does. And on that particular day, just to go back to that particular day, our son at that time was living about three doors over, and he was more worried about the whole thing than I, because he said, "Mom, I know you're doing it for family and friends, but what are you going to do when it's bacon in the oven? Well, how are you going to get through that time, you know?" And I said, "Mitchell, I'll just talk. Oh, I don't know. I'll think of something." I didn't have any preparation. And so it's funny how those things happen. And it worked out just fine the way it was.
It worked out absolutely just fine. Why do you think you became so successful and grew in popularity?
People tell me all the time that, you know, it's real. And, you know, I'm not putting on any airs or anything because I am who I am. And I kind of think the people really like the idea of popping in for a visit, even though it was virtual, and just spending time and sitting around the table, having a cup of tea, and having a little piece of a baked item and catching up on the news. I never advertised it as being a baking show as such, because I'm not a pastry chef or a cook of any kind, but I just love being in my kitchen and making food for people. And I think that's what people were drawn to. And I'd add a little bit of music too. And when I could, I would get, when we could, were allowed to have live music in, I would call on our musicians who weren't doing gigs. And I thought, well, I can help them in some way, make people familiar with their music, or even authors. I had Leslie Crew on, and I think it just kind of evolved into what it became, in that people realized, oh, I'm just going to sit down and I'm just going to listen to what Mary Janet's doing today or what she has done this past week. And I was quite comfortable with that, I think. And I think that's what people were drawn to, and that, you know, this is no big celebrity. It's just somebody in their home enjoying chatting with people, perhaps. Mm.
Yes, and absolutely that came through. It felt like you were opening the door. I come from Miramichi. So when, yes, I went back to, so a small, you know, smaller community at the time when I was growing up. And when I went back and watched your session, the very first session, there was just, I loved it. I was laughing, not laughing at you, but just out of just enjoyment, yeah, and chuckling. And the warmth and authenticity that you exuded came through. So you're exactly right, that you're so real. And I think that's what, you know, people connect with you. That's one of the reasons why they connect with you. And it feels like you're the ultimate hostess. It would be as if you were sitting at your kitchen table having that cup of tea, and a little music didn't hurt either.
Yeah, you know, just to pass the time, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours. And oh my gosh, when I think back of some of the things that I did, I even made bread a couple of times, and I said, well, I'll just mix it up and then put it to rise, and I'll sign off and I'll tell them to come back in an hour and we'll pan it, and then we'll put it to rise, and then we'll sign off, and then we'll come back when we're going to bake it and we'll chat then. And when you think about that, doing all of that stuff in real time, wasn't it crazy?
But I love it. You did it unafraid.
Yeah. I was just on a whim, honest to heavens. It was so fun. I don't regret one thing that happened over these past 3 years. It's just been wonderful for me. And I've met so many wonderful people. And I've had just heart-to-heart conversations with people outside of the show that I never would have met. People that were dealing with cancer, and they're passing the time, like watching the show when they couldn't do anything. They would lie in bed and just watch a show, and it would take their mind off it. And that, another lady that I frequently speak of was a lady from Glace Bay here in Cape Breton. And she was 88, had raised, I think, 8 or 10 children. And she was a cook all her life and baked for her family with little or nothing at times. And she just was gravitated towards the show because I don't know if it was because I had the 7 children perhaps or what, but her daughter kept telling me, and her daughter would write messages to me how much her mom enjoyed it. And we had some very real conversations, and this lady lost a daughter during that time. And, you know, I connected with her then and sent her something. And then last year she passed away, and just the messages I got back from her children and how much it became a part of her life over those 2 first years. It's all the feedback just makes you feel so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy that I made that connection with her and many more like that, you know, just many more like that.
Mm. It's so blessed. Many amazing stories. Yeah. Blessings.
Yep. Blessed.
Yeah. Heart to heart connections. I think that's what you did when you were making that heart to heart connection, when you were coming in live into people's homes. I mean, I totally get why it worked. People were craving it. I think people are craving it in general, don't you? Not just during the pandemic.
Yeah, I believe that too. Absolutely. Mm.
One of the things you said is that you're very comfortable with yourself. You know that who you are. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, your upbringing, that your mom died very young and you were just really a toddler or preschoolers. And so you went to live with a grand aunt. And you say that really shaped who you were today. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that shaped you and how did that make you, was that part of making yourself so comfortable and so real with yourself?
I really believe that certainly shaped how things were, like the path that happens when I guess I'll go back to say, and in many small communities, it's probably similar, but back in the day, like I was born in the early 50s and people looked after their own. Everybody looked after one another in these small communities and made sure that everybody was taken care of. Food was brought to doors, clothing, you name it. And when my mother got sick when I was about 1 year old, and she was expecting her 6th child, and they discovered cervical carcinoma, and she lasted another, you know, 2.5 years. But, you know, you were always aware of who you were and who you're, even though I was raised in another home, I always knew how much I was loved by not just my father and my other siblings, but this family that took me in, who were my relatives, who I call Mama and Papa, and her 6 children, although 10 years older than me at the time, were my siblings. To this day, I'm close to both of my families, my biological family and the family I was raised in. And I think it's the love that is shared in small communities and how, you know, okay, we have a tragedy. We have to deal with it, and we'll just do what we can to take care of our fellow man, and just my big motto is love one another. And I grew up in that environment, and I believe that that's what made me who I am. Okay, you have something, you know, difficult that's happened. You just have to get through it. Faith is a big part of my life and was a big part of my upbringing. And that has certainly shaped who I am. And your community, your community you're raised in, the community of your faith community, all of those things, I think, just make you a better person, make you stronger, and know that, you know, there's always something worse that can happen. And, just make the best of every situation and be good to people and share yourself and be your best self for those people. And I don't know, that's just who I am. And I love being with people. I love making them happy. I love making sure that if they need me, I'm there 100%. And I don't like negativity. I don't think anybody does, but you know, I try to keep myself not. I don't ever want to be that kind of person. And I think I learned that from the environment, because it was really good people that surrounded me in my youth. And I took that into my own marriage and my own community.
Mm. One of the things you say you were exposed to a lot growing up was music and laughter. It was steeped in tradition. And one of the things that you learned was from Natalie McMaster's mom, who Minnie McMaster, so many people know Natalie.
Yes.
And she taught, or her mother taught you step dancing. And that is actually, you've taught it for 30 years and is taking you around the world traveling to teach that.
Yes.
Can you, how did that start, or how did you get that opportunity?
Well, when I was young, like I guess growing up in the Beaton household, that was the surname of the family that I lived with. As you may or may not know, but the northeastern Nova Scotia was settled greatly in the late 1700s and in the 1800s with the Highland clearances from Scotland. So there was a lot of families who brought their traditions and stuff with them to Cape Breton, and it was very protected for many, many years until like television came into our lives in the 50s and 60s so much. So a lot of the traditions that came from Scotland certainly stayed very pure in where we were raised here in the Mabu area. And that was very much a part of where I lived at that time. So the lady who raised me was born in 1902, just to give you an idea of her age at the time. And so she was really big on, I'm talking about Margaret Ann Beaton, who would have been mama to me. She would have been my grandmother's sister. And she was a Gaelic speaker first and foremost. And she was full of music and, Gaelic stories and just all the goodness that came with that side of our culture. And so their home was always filled with music. Visiting musicians would come and drop in, and of course you'd have the tea and the cookies and the everything to go with that, or the meal that was necessary. Because a lot of these fiddlers that came, sometimes they were just going from village to village and being housed by families, and their pay was music, right? Mm. And so in that household, Natalie's mom was a wonderful step dancer, which was something that was passed down through the generations, because my great-grandfather was a wonderful step dancer. He was born around 1850, Donald Cameron. So it was just kind of a natural thing in that home to learn from. Mama used to jig the tunes with her mouth. You know, she would sing tunes, and I will just demonstrate shortly the way she sounded out the tunes. For example, she rolled this music in her mouth, but it was just wonderful and entertaining to hear her, and she knew the tunes as good as any fiddler. So she would sing that, and we called it jigging the tunes, and Minnie would be dancing, and then Minnie would take me by the hand, and she would make me learn the dancing. And that evolved into local concerts, and then it, you know, went on to, with Minnie and I, into you know, little television shows that happened here and there. And then coming into the late 60s, early 70s, there was a real decline in our in our fiddlers and dancers. And, you know, up to that point, everybody was just kind of learning in their own home, and there was square dances, etc. But then the CBC did a documentary on the vanishing Cape Breton fiddler. Was a documentary that in many ways was the spark behind the renewal in our fiddle music and our dancing. And they discovered the people who were saying, okay, we've got to change this. We've got to prove to them that it's not dying, that there's people still out there playing and dancing. So we started step dancing lessons, which we never knew how to teach dancing or whatever. So I began in those early 70s teaching dancing in Mabu. And before too long, it just exploded. Everybody was wanting to learn the old traditions, and I couldn't keep up with all of the requests. And then in the 80s, I started traveling to Scotland. I traveled to Scotland to teach it, where it has been lost. And it's fine now in that location in Scotland. It's come back there. But I was one of the first ones that brought it back in 1983 to a festival there. And then I went to California, then Chicago, Utah, Seattle, Denmark. It just lots of opportunities to bring back this culture. And with every time I would teach it, I was teaching it with Mama in mind, because she just wanted us to keep this tradition going. She was so proud that we continued teaching. And Minnie did too, but not to that extent. She didn't really travel too many places, kept it local. Of course, she had a family at the time with her own children. But it was a wonderful path in my life. And I think if my mother, for example, didn't pass away, you don't know what life is going to put in your pathway. Perhaps if I didn't get raised in the family that I was in, that I wouldn't have learned how to step dance, and I wouldn't have become the person that I am today. Who knows? There's something good in everything. So that's kind of my story on the step dancing side.
You are a positive person to make sense and meaning out of tragedy, and to say that this is now my path and that this is also a good path. I mean, sometimes people have difficulty with that. I mean, tragedy is often something that's hard to understand, but to be able to accept and know that you can still have a good life and a new path is an amazing mindset.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you have some amazing stories. And one of the things that you do in your second book is you highlight 12 women from Cape Breton, which I'll be honest, when I picked up the copy of the book, I had a great intention of giving it as a gift until I sat down and started thumbing through it. Okay. And then I kept it for myself. And then I owe that person a book. But I loved it because of the stories in there. And one of the things that you focus on, these women are at least like 70 to 106, probably a majority of them 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And of different descent, Scottish, Mi'kmaq, Acadian, and Dutch. And how did you come to focus on this as a second book? I thought it was a very unique idea.
Well, I'll give you a little story about that. When the publisher contacted me initially for the first book, I really, really didn't feel like qualified to be putting out a cookbook, because it was just a simple, basic baker. But as I agreed and I paid tribute in that first book to my three mothers, I call them, my real mother, who I didn't really get to know very much, to the mother who raised me, and to my mother-in-law, who I love dearly and who taught me much about baking as well. And so when the publisher, the first book did extremely well, it was a bestseller, I don't know, three or four times over. And when they wanted me to do a second book, I said no. I didn't. I hadn't no plans on doing that. And I didn't feel like I was the right person to be doing a cookbook again. I don't think anybody would buy the second one. That's what I was saying. And they were really wanting me to find the strength and do that. And to be honest, I don't cry a lot. I cry with sad things or whatever, but I actually cried over that second book because I was so worried that people would think that I was thinking I was something else to be putting out a book like that. And so we ended up sitting down as a family, and Margie was at the table, our daughter that initially began this, and she's just said, "Mom, okay, what did you like about the first cookbook? What was the most special thing about the first cookbook?" And I said, "Well, I was really glad to talk about the Cape Breton culture and share the simple recipes that were passed down to me by my three mothers, because that's another story. I found a cookbook that my real mother had at the beginning of COVID. It was just timely. I'll go back to that after. But I said, most importantly, besides the recipes and the stories about Cape Breton culture and where we lived, I was so happy to put down in print and pay tribute to those three mothers, and to that I know that I'm leaving that long after I'm gone, that my children, grandchildren, maybe great-grandchildren will say, oh, this is who I am. This is who I'm descended from. So that's what I liked best about that first book. And so Margie, being Margie, said, well, why can't you do that but with other mothers? You know how you've talked to different people, and like one example was Sally Watts, for example, lady here in Port Hood. She's now 95 or 96. And she said, you know that show you did with her and her Christmas donuts? Couldn't you do that with others as well? And it just kind of lit a little spark in me. And I said, oh my gosh, you know, we could represent the coastline of the Western Cape Breton. And, you know, we could include different cultures, because I've become friends with this indigenous lady that's in the book. And it just started like that. And you know, there's some family members that I picked as well that were related, and they just seemed to dot the coastline, and it just kind of evolved from that. And I wanted everybody to at least be 80 years old and older, and ended up with the one lady who was 106 and who has since passed away this past year. Actually, I'll go to her. Her name is Jessie McDonald. And when in October, when my book came out, I had been away on an Italy trip, and the book was landing around that time. And when I got home, I said, I have to bring this to Jessie and deliver it today. I delivered it on a Friday, and a week later, she was gone. But her family told me that for the first day and the next day, that's what she did. She opened the book at her page, and she looked at the pictures and read the story. And, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, she was just a lady that would never be in print anywhere else, but her family now have that memory. And what she told me that day, and the poem that she recited that day. I love that those women who never would be remembered or be in print or in photo in any other that I know of publication, that I could feature them and share their story. And, oh, they were all such beautiful women. And I don't know if you noticed in the first of the book, that was one thing that Margie wanted, because she's like photographer on the side. And she said, we have to do their hands. We have to take a picture of their hands clasped and just see the age and all those things that those hands have mixed, and how they changed babies, and, you know, folded laundry. And I just love that picture so much. If you get a chance, make sure you have a look at that picture. And so there's on one page, there's a picture of their 12 hands. And on the right-hand side, it's my hands. So it's kind of like 13, a baker's dozen.
I love it. And I loved all of those stories, reading them. And there was something special about that. And I love the fact that you highlighted the older women in a society that often doesn't celebrate older women. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine how delighted they must be to see themselves in print.
Oh, yes. I've heard back from them and they're so proud, you know, so proud. Such good living people, very humble and wonderful. Oh my gosh. I have to tell you, one of the ladies, her name was Jessie Tompkins. Had never met her before, but she was recommended to me to be representative of the Marguerite area. And what a spunky lady she was, or she is, I should say. She is. She lives up this dirt road. She lives by herself in her old home. She doesn't have regular power. She's never had regular power coming into her home, but she does have a little generator that her son keeps her up to, but she's so happy living by herself. And she talked about all the things that she used to, you know, love to bake and make and all of that stuff. But I had 30 questions that I had put together that I wanted to ask everybody, you know, to so that I'd have things to draw from when I would write up my little story. And, I think I got to question number 5 and she said, "What are you going to do? Are you just going to sit there and ask me questions all day? Let's just sit and have a cup of tea or how about a hot toddy? I love Old Sam's rum and I'd like to have a toddy." I mean, just spunk, you know, just wonderful, rich people that you're thinking, well, my God, people need to know about this lady. I'm telling you, she's wonderful. So I'm so happy that her story is there and, you know, her family will have that to hang on to long after she's gone.
Mm. It'll be a special record for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What delights you in getting older? Do you mind aging?
You know what? I don't. I love every decade of my life and, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready for whatever life has to throw at me. And this is a time in my life where I am enjoying my grandchildren. For the last couple of decades, I've had my oldest grandchild is 23 and the youngest is just turned 3. So to see them develop in their lifetime. And you know, things change. Your abilities change, and I'm okay. I'm okay with that. You know, I'm lucky, and I'm thankful for every birthday that I have, because there are many that don't get to celebrate a birthday anymore. And when I think of my mother, I'll tell you a little story. She was 37 when she passed away.
So
and
young.
When the year I turned 37, the day I turned 37, it's so funny how you deal with things. And of course, at that time I had 7 children. When she gave birth to 6 children, but one died in infancy. So she had 5 children. But I was walking in her shoes for that day and for days after, as I turned 37, and I was thinking about what was she thinking? She knew she was going to pass away, and she was a woman of great faith, and she made a little bundle for each one of us to get when we, you know, were turned a certain age, and you know, she was just, okay, I accept this. So I accept who I am and the age that I am, and I'm grateful for every year that I get to celebrate a birthday. And whatever the next few years bring to me, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
You say right in the front of the book that this book is simply not just about baking. It has taught you and your loved ones about the human spirit and the importance of connection. What have you learned about the human spirit?
I would say, you know, resilience. I've learned a lot in that book from these women that I talk to, and some of the stories, you know, some of the stories, I didn't share everything that they shared with me at their request, but the resilience and how people faced adversity and just persevered, and you know, the character of people. I'm just in awe of these women and many women that so many more could have been featured, but just you know, you come from good stock, and there's good people out there, and we have so much to learn from them in accepting who the hard times and the good times, and just, you know what? Accept what you have and what life challenges you with, and be happy for every breath you take. And you know, we're all in this together, and we have to make the best of it. And you have to look after yourself first, and your family, and your neighbor, and your community, and just be the best person that you can be. And I guess that's kind of what I meant by that.
What have you learned about the importance of connection? I mean, you obviously love it.
Oh my gosh. There's so much out there. I've connected with so many good people. I have visitors drop in all the time. I just last week from Ontario, and the connection that we have made with one another, you know, I've become virtual friends, but now some of these people have come and visited me at my home. I have to tell you, a couple of weeks ago, I had this lovely lady at my home and her friend, Lydia Adams. You'll have to Google her. But she was sitting at my kitchen table, and I knew that they were coming, and I made blueberry scones and some lemon curd. And this lady, who has been an icon in the Canadian music scene for many, many years as a conductor and of choral groups and part of Juno nominations and all of that, very, to me, a very prominent lady who just wanted to come and have tea with me. And we just really, really connected at a beautiful level. As a matter of fact, she was just texting with me last night. And this is someone who is in such high regard, and, you know, just little old me. And she just wanted to have tea with someone that she was watching that helped her during the pandemic. And as well, her friend who was with her, Maura, off the same. These beautiful people who just, you know, they just wanted, they wanted to do something during the pandemic, and they just happened upon this little baking show, and just got connected in that way, and it was just so nice. All these different connections. I cannot tell you the number of connections. People traveled from BC by car with their two children in 2021 to come to a show. And, you know, the family, one of the children has, you know, some disabilities, And he loved watching the show, you know, this little boy, and just to meet me. And he was so excited. And it was just, I don't know. There were so many good people out there. Sometimes we're listening to the news and there's such, you know, there's such bad things. Sometimes we're just hearing that. But there are so many good people and good people to connect with. And I've been the recipient of these connections since this started, and I'll never forget it. And my door is open. If you want to come for a visit, you
if
do
I'm
that.
I'll be on your way. I'll be doing that.
You
I'm
do
sure
that.
Anybody else listening will be like, we want to go visit Mary Janet.
I know.
Yeah, well, it's just that wonderful connection. And I think so many of us are looking for that connection generally. And whatever has happened during the pandemic has certainly exacerbated. And I think there needs to be more of that sense of community. And you feel like community, you know, when you speak, when you share that, you can tell that you love life. And one of the things you say is that you're very positive. You said it here, and you even said it in your bio, I'm a positive person. So how do you stay positive during dark times?
I don't know. I just look, there's always a sunny side to everything. You know, I don't like looking at the humdrum things. I'm happy. I'm happy all the time. I feel like I am. And it's just a mindset. If I want everything to go well, I think of all the good things that, you know, can happen from just having a good conversation, for example. I just have that mindset of being positive all the time and just looking for the good in everything. And I guess we just sometimes when bad things happen, we just have to take there's a lesson when something bad happens. And there's something that you can take from that and learn from it and go forward and put it behind you and not to make that mistake again, perhaps, or to hope that that never happens again. And just do your best, I guess.
Great message. Will we see a third recipe book?
Not at this time. I mean, the publisher, you know, did approach me about what's next. Can we do something else? And for now, I'm just taking a hiatus from that because I think everything in my heart and in my home are in those two books. There, you know, who's to say that there might not be a storyline of some sort that, you know, wouldn't appeal to everyone, but there might be something down the road. But not for another couple of years, at least. And I'm just entertaining some other things, you know, that may happen. We shall see. I certainly the cookbooks have been out there, and that's a wonderful thing. But I always thought, you know, I'd love to have one little baking product that I could market and maybe would appeal to visitors who want to take a little piece of Cape Breton home with them. And so I've been thinking about that, and I have to work out the logistics of that to see if it's even possible. But that's something that I kind of really like to do. You know, maybe it's a little package of, you know, Cape Breton oat cakes or you know, something such that that would appeal to people who are visiting us and have the little Toons and Woodens Boons logo on there. And but I know I might be dreaming in the stars, and it might not happen, but it's something that that I'd like to do. And maybe that'll happen. I'm not sure.
Sounds exciting and a little bit of a teaser, something for us to look forward to. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation today. I wanted to end by quoting you from your book because I thought it was beautiful. And you say, We are called to love one another, to make our world better, to endow our gifts to the world and strive to bring happiness to others. We must help them know that they matter and that they are loved. So let's gather around the table to share stories, food, and laughter over a hot cup of tea. This is my favorite way to service love without measure. So I thank you for sharing your stories and love with us today. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was so warm, and I'm glad we were able to connect.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And hello to everybody out there, and pop into Port Hood sometime and we might meet again.
Yes. And you are still doing shows, just less of them on the live. So if people go follow you at Tunes and Wooden Spoons, they'll be able to find you and all your information.
That's right. If you just Google it, you'll find me somewhere on there, I guess.
Perfect. Thank you, Mary Janet.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.